This is my buddy Joel. Jesus was having a conversation with his disciples. And they were talking about who's the greatest in the kingdom. What did Jesus do? He took a child and he said, unless you become like this, you can't enter the kingdom. You have to understand, you cannot enter the kingdom. And I'm watching this morning, and I'm thinking to myself, how many of us want to be close to our dads like that? That's the kingdom. Is when you're willing to dance a little bit, run around a little bit, do a kettlebell workout a little bit, sing a little bit, all close to your Father. Until you understand that, you don't understand the kingdom. So I'm grateful for the illustration this morning. How about you? Yeah? Yeah, me too. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it a lot. So cool. Well, happy Mother's Day to all you moms and all those of you who have mothers. So glad that you're all here. Those of you who are online, glad that you're here too, that you're able to be with us. Okay. So, the series that we're in right now, we're exploring the time frame between the resurrection and Pentecost. Roughly 50 days. There's this period of waiting that's occurring. And I'll say it before, or I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Most of us aren't really good at waiting, but it's really important. And we want to look at what the disciples did as they waited, so that maybe we can learn some things. Because I'm always interested in the fact that in the grand story that God is trying to tell us, there's always these little sub-stories, and they're marvelous. The things that we can learn from them. And so today we're going to turn our attention back to Luke chapter 24. So if you have Bible or Bible app, you may want to look that up. Luke 24 is where we're going to be to get another perspective on this idea of waiting. So let me read the section first, and then I'm going to make some comments about it. Luke chapter 24, I am beginning in the verse numbered 9. This is right after the resurrection. When they, meaning a group of women, came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. Because Jesus had 12 disciples, then Judas decided to leave the group rather dramatically. And so there were the 11, but there were other people who followed Jesus as well. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. And why not? They watched the rabbi die, they watched him be buried, and now he was supposedly not in the tomb. You would have thought the exact same thing. Let's just be fair. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away wondering to himself what had happened. This is the word of the Lord, and we believe it. Now, the first three verses that we read here in Luke 24 parallel what we read in Mark chapter 16. We just read these a few weeks ago. In Mark chapter 16, there's this series of stories, but the pattern is the same. There's an encounter with Jesus, there's a report to the disciples, and there's disbelief. Or maybe dismissal, right? You've got this series of things. We see the same thing here. And they're in parallel to each other, but there's one crucial difference, and that's what we find in verse 12 when it says, Peter, however, or in Greek it's more, but Peter, by contrast, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away wondering to himself what had happened. Now, this is really an interesting kind of thing, and we need to hit the pause button, and we need to talk about the fact that the stories differ here. Because remember, we were talking, there's four different Gospels, and sometimes there's this sense of, well, they're not telling the exact same story, they're just different enough. Believe it or not, that doesn't erode the narrative, it only underscores it. Because you have different people writing from different perspectives, to different audiences, at different times, with different agendas. Again, we have to triangulate these things by comparing these stories together. By the way, if you're interested in this type of thing, it's called textual criticism, which is just a fancy way of making comparisons between different verses and different translations, as well as different authors. So why is there a difference here? Why does Mark not include the little section about Peter? And what's so puzzling about that is that Mark's gospel is the one that's associated with Peter. John Mark, the author of it, was a close associate with Peter, and the general tradition is that he received his gospel directly from Peter's mouth and wrote it down. So why wouldn't Peter include this little detail that Luke does? Well, I suppose we could speculate on that. There's no real reason that the text gives us, but I suspect that it has a lot to do with the tone and purpose that each of these authors are writing from. Mark, every time I read Mark, there's this urgency, as if Peter's telling these stories and Mark is furiously trying to write this stuff down so he doesn't miss anything. And so Peter, you know, may or may not have talked about himself. Who knows what that is? But Luke, on the other hand, is Greek. He's a physician. He's a historian. He's very interested in detail. And so there's a very good chance, at least in my opinion, that he heard about what Peter did and said, oh, I need to include that. You see, different authors trying to tell the same story from different perspectives, and it makes sense. Now, if you don't believe me, how many times have you started telling a story and your spouse corrected you? Oh, you in church, don't lie, right? This is the same kind of thing. There are certain details that one author is going to produce than others. But again, it doesn't erode it, it underscores it, I think. I think it's important that we understand that. Now, I want you to notice, too, that after Peter investigates, notice what he does. And I think this is very interesting. And he went away wondering to himself what had happened. And the sense here is kind of like, what just happened, right? There's a wondering that occurred. Other translations will use the word marveled about it. The Greek word, if you're interested, is thaumazo, which is fun to say. A lot of Greek is thaumazo. And it means to wonder, to marvel, or to admire in some cases. But what's interesting to me is that this type of wondering does not carry with it necessarily the idea of disbelief, right? Because sometimes you can wonder and go, I just can't believe that. That's not the case. He is seeing evidence and he's wondering, like, what just happened? How do I make sense of this? There's no category for this, right? And usually we look for, human beings, we look for patterns. There are things that we understand because we've experienced them before, but when something new comes along, we wonder. We marvel, especially if it's kind of exciting, right? Turn over to Luke chapter 8. I want you to see something else real quick. I think this is fun. Beginning with verse 22. One day Jesus said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side of the lake, I'm talking about the Sea of Galilee. So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. You know this story. You've seen this in Flannel Graph. I know you have. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him up saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." Which is really interesting because some of these people were fishermen. They're used to this stuff. Big deal. He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and water, and they obey him." In fear, the Greek word is phobos, that's where we get the word phobia, and amazement is thaumazo, wondering, marveling. So there's a certain amount of fear here, but there isn't disbelief. It's, "Oh my gosh, what just happened?" See that? Same word. Luke chapter 8 gives us a sense of what it means for Peter to wonder. He's felt this way before. My suspicion is if you're a disciple hanging out with Jesus, you're probably experiencing this from time to time more often than you would probably care to admit. Wondering to himself what actually happened. The disciples, in fear and amazement, phobos and thaumazo. And Peter went away, thaumazo, to himself. What had happened? Wondering. Now, verse 12, I think, is actually helpful, especially if you would like to experience wonder and amazement, which I don't know about you, but I like that. I like that feeling. It's a little scary at times, but that's okay. And if you want to experience that type of wonder, maybe you might want to follow Peter's example. Now, I'm going to do something that I don't think I've ever done before. Maybe I have. But if I have, it's been so long, I don't remember it. But I want to try something here because I think this is really important. There's three phrases here that I think are worth us examining. And so what I want to do is I want to say them, and I want you to repeat after me, okay? Because I think this is important, okay? Three things Peter did. Say it after me. Get up.
Get up.
Yeah. Run to. Look in. Get up. Run to. Look in. Three separate things that Peter does. The first thing he does is he actually got up. Now remember, he and the disciples are hanging out, probably having snacks, because that's what we do in the church. We eat together. It started here, I'm pretty sure of it. But the point is they're hanging out together. These women come in with this astonishing news. Everybody else are like, "This is just crazy talk." But Peter, on the other hand, got up. My guess is he probably dusted a few crumbs off of his shirt as he did it. He got up first. He pulled himself up off the couch or from the table, whatever it is. And what's really interesting to me, when I think about it, rarely does wonder just come to us. Sometimes. The Lord can, and he does, surprise us. But normally he comes when we're seeking him. Maybe not at the time or in the moment, because we're microwave generation, we want things right now, but when we're actually seeking him, that's when he surprises us. And I think what's even more amusing is the fact that when we seek him, we're actually surprised when he surprises us, right? It comes to that point where it's like, "Oh, I wasn't expecting that." And God's like, "What were you seeking?" You know, kind of a thing. But sometimes you have to get up. You actually have to move in order for God to surprise you with something truly wondrous. get up, run to, look in. So he got up, and then it says that he ran to the tomb. He goes to the source of the strange report. He doesn't walk, he runs. He runs to the tomb. You know, he might have dismissed or doubted, but he didn't. He got up and he ran too. What he did not do, and I think this is really important, he didn't speculate. He didn't do what the other disciples did and just go, well, this is nonsense. We're not even going to waste our time with it. If there's any chance for what these women are saying to be true, I need to go find out. There's motivation there to get up and to run too. And I don't want to miss anything, because what if he's still there? I want to run to that particular source so that I can see it for myself. I want to investigate on my own. And it always amazes me how we usually wait to ask God for something. You know what I mean? We do this all the time. We're in that place where, you know, we're dealing with a decision, or there's something that we want to pursue, or maybe there's even conflict that we have in a relationship. Whatever it happens to be, why is it that we wait to take that to God when nothing else works? Oh, come on, you do it. I know you do. I think we all do that. We delay our prayers. But Peter seems to me to have a better idea. Run, don't walk, to the source, towards the presence of God. That's what he was after. He just watched his rabbi be killed, and he realizes the loss that's in his life. And if he can be in his presence one more time, if he can be standing like a child next to his father, if he can be in that kind of presence, he's going to take it. So he takes off running. Somebody talked about this once. I'm trying to remember who, but I really liked it. The great one, Wayne Gretzky, for you hockey fans, was asked in an interview once why he thought he was so good. And he says, I always try to skate to where the puck will be. What if we had that same approach with God? I want to skate to the puck. I want to run to that tomb. I want to be in the place where he is. What if we had that type of mentality to all of this? What would it be like to say, oh God, I want to know where you are, and that's where I want to be too, and allow him to guide and direct those thoughts? But don't just saunter. Run. Don't delay your prayers. Start now. I've said this to my wife multiple times. I'm going to eventually ask God anyway. Why don't I just start with that, right? And then delay all the heartbreak because all my stuff doesn't work. Some of you are laughing because you know my wife. And get up, run to, look in. And the final thing, and I really love what Peter does here. He doesn't run aimlessly. He goes so that he can look in. He wants to look into the tomb because that was the place where Jesus was. Maybe he's still there, maybe not, but he's going to go check this out for himself. He didn't take Mary's word, nor did he fall into the trap the other disciples. He looked for himself. Now notice, those are two totally different things. On the one hand, you could just take someone's word for it and go, oh wow, that's really interesting. But you would miss out on the wonder and amazement. In fact, you would probably have doubts. Were they telling the truth? Did they see what they really did? Nor did he fall into the other trap of complete dismissal. No, that's nonsense. That doesn't follow with the patterns that I'm used to. It doesn't follow the laws of nature, so it couldn't possibly be true. He doesn't do either one of those. He takes the third route. He goes and he checks for himself. He gets up, expends a little bit of energy to it, runs to even more energy, and then he looks in for himself. Pastor Dan often says that if you're not hearing from God, you need to go back to what he last said to you and do that. You have to look into what was being said. You have to look into what he's doing so that you can experience that wonder. So if you're missing something, maybe you need to look into it. Wonder might involve some investigation. In fact, I'm sure of it. Some of you know that this often happens to me. But if I'm trying to spend some time with God, very often a verse or a book and chapter will cross my mind, which usually means I got to go read the whole thing. And I think the Lord knows me well enough that I'm curious enough that I'm going to go look it up. And so he pokes my curiosity, like a poking the bear with sticks, because Jesus is not afraid of my bear. And so he'll poke it, and he'll poke it often. And I have to read the whole thing. And very often, the verse that he gives me is not the thing he wants to tell me, but it's somewhere else in that book. And I'm always astonished when I come across something going, oh my gosh, this is for me right now. And I go away from the passage wondering, thaumazo, marveling at the fact that he wants to speak to me in that particular way. I love it when that happens. Just means that I got to spend some time. I have to get up, open up the word, I got to flip to it, and then I have to read it. Get up, run to, look in. Very simple. See, the text reads, but Peter. I want to be like Peter. I don't want to fall into the trap of dismissal or just taking somebody's word for it. I want to see it for myself. I want to be like Peter, and I want to be more like him because he's chasing after God. That's the way I want to be too. Peter marveled and he wondered and he did what he could to see his Lord. Chased after it. Here's the interesting thing about marveling, about wondering, about being amazed. Usually speaking, when you're marveling, it usually gives you a great story to tell. Mary had a great story, didn't she? You're not going to believe this. Half the disciples are like, yep. But Peter, he takes off. It's a great story. That's what we call testimony. Remember that word? Testimony. We're testifying. We're his witnesses. And it's easy to lose wonder. And that's why story and testimony is crucial, because it does two things. One, it reminds ourselves that God is still active in the world today. He's still around. And it gives other people an opportunity to marvel as well. What? That actually happened? Uh-huh. That's what happened to me. I don't know what your experience is, but here's mine. It's a great story. It's testifying to the thing that God had done, and that's what builds our faith over a period of time. That's the other thing marveling does. It builds our faith. It builds the faith that resides inside ourselves and in others. If God did this, he can do anything. If God did this for this person over here, then God can do something for me. If God did something for me, he can do something for you. It builds the faith that God is still active in the world today. That's why we tell the story. That's why we want to marvel. And here's the other one. It leaves us wanting more. When we actually marvel at something, we're truly astonished by this thing that God had done. There's this part of you that goes, oh, God, give me more of that. I'm in. I want to see more of that kind of thing occur. Whenever I hear testimony of God moving in somebody's life, there's this part of me that it creates this thirst, this hunger for just a little bit more. I want that. and encourage us. Wonder in the lives of the people around us. Get up, run to, look in. Don't be surprised if something happens to you in the next couple of weeks and those three phrases come back to mind. And I think I'm speaking a little prophetically here, but I would not be surprised if some of you experience something and you're not sure what to do, and all of a sudden, in the back of your mind, you hear, get up, run to, look in. Don't ignore that, because the Lord might be trying to give you something to marvel at, and I don't want you to miss out. Get up, run to, look in. Today is Family Sunday, which means we take communion. It's this ancient ritual. And you know what? It's really easy to do it mechanically. Oh, we do this. I grew up in a church tradition where we did it, I think, every other week. And it was this big affair that we did. But it was very mechanical. My favorite $5 word for that is perfunctory. You can look it up. I don't know if it's Greek, maybe. But when we think about it, it represents something truly astonishing. That a man was born, lived, ministered, died, and was resurrected. And not only was it a man, but he was also God himself. That the God of the universe chose to wrap himself in human flesh to hang out with us. And sometimes I think we get it wrong when we think that, you know, it's God just coming down to show us a better way. Yes, that's true, but he also did it so that we would understand him. We understand babies. We understand people working. We understand human relationship. And he did show us a better way, but he did it so that we could understand. It wasn't a list of rules. We did that before. But rather, he comes down and says, no, this is what it looks like. And it's astonishing. The body and blood of the one who loved us enough to sacrifice himself. That's what we're remembering here. And so I wonder if today, when you're taking your communion, however you want to do it, I wonder if you might take the elements and marvel. This is what it means? That we celebrate the death and resurrection, that the tomb was empty, and that someone had the courage to get up, run to it, and look in, just to see, just to make sure. And that we can now have confidence because somebody did that. So I wonder if you might take the elements and marvel just a little bit. Thrive Church, we have what's called an open table. That means if you're a follower of Jesus, this is for you. We invite you to be a part of it. It's something that his disciples participate in. I love this. Every single time we do this, it reminds me that we are connected to this ancient thing that's 2,000 years old, but it also connects us to the rest of the world. There are Christians all over this planet who are doing this today. They've already done it. They will still do it later on. But the point is that this is something that binds us all together. There is a collective wonder about what Jesus actually did. I don't ever want to miss that. I don't ever want to lose that. I want to make sure that when I approach the elements that I'm wondering, I'm marveling. Oh my gosh. And what's more, he did it for you. And I don't mean just you collectively. I mean you individually sitting in each one of those chairs. And if I had the time, I'd name you all by names, that he did it for you. And there's wonder and there's beauty in all of this. And so I would just ask you, as you take the elements today, is try to keep those things in mind. On the night in which he was betrayed, Jesus was with his disciples. And they were eating together, and he took a very common element, bread. And after he gave thanks, he broke it and he passed it out to his disciples, and he said, I want you to take and eat this. And every time you do, I want you to remember me. And I think personally, this is just my interpretation of it, I think there was this implicit idea of and marvel. But they didn't understand it at that point, and that's okay. Because later they would. And again, after the supper, he took the cup, common element. After he gave thanks, he passed it to his disciples. He says, every time you drink, I want you to remember me. And again, I think implicit to all that is and marvel. And of course they didn't understand it. Of course they couldn't have understood it. They didn't experience it yet. But that moment afterwards, when he had talked to them and been with them and showed him his hands and his feet and made it real, there had to have been this collective wonder that took place. Oh, this is what he meant. Yeah. Kind Father, as we gather around this table, we do so with wonder that we meant so much to you that you would do this thing for us. And I pray, Lord, that your Spirit would be active with us today, that as we do this thing to remember, we would experience the wonder afresh. I don't know what circumstances each one of these individuals find themselves in today, but I trust that you do. And in the moment, Spirit, lead us, guide us, direct us, that we could draw close to you through this simple ritual, so we could be in your presence. Let each one of us become like a little child so that we can be eligible for your kingdom, that we would step into your kingdom, and that daily we would begin to experience your kingdom more and more. Thank you, Father, for this simple thing that means so much. I pray this all in Jesus' name. Everybody said, amen.